call it to order and begin with a roll call of board members, please.
Okay. Mr. Wilkins? Mr. Sheldon?
Present.
Mr. Hughes?
Present.
Mr. Arvin?
Here.
Commissioner Bell?
Here.
Chair Short? Sick, right?
And I think Mr. Wilson is on. I'm not sure if he responded affirmatively.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't hear my name. Wilkin present by teleconference.
Thank you.
And of our board members and guests that have joined us by teleconference, if you have the ability to mute your phone, especially someone who may have children in the background, that'd be helpful. Okay. Looking at the agenda, may I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on the agenda? Any objection to the agenda as presented? Seeing none, the agenda is approved. Can we move to roll call of staff, please?
Ted Leonard, Ada.
Karsten Rusick, Ada.
Chris Rutz, Ada.
Jerry Judea, Department of Law.
Jim Smith, Ada.
Valerie Walker, Ada.
Jim Sanders, Ada.
Chris Anderson, Ada.
Sherry Severson, Ada.
Green Heffernan, Ada.
Now public.
David Devine.
Do you with sir?
Law Office of Grow Eggers.
Dennis Fennerty, Grow Eggers, representing Ada. Both of us are here for Ada.
Mark Gardner, Western Financial Group.
Sunny Morrison, X-type depositions.
Okay, looks like everyone. We're now at agenda item number 5, public comments. Is there anyone present in the room that would like to make comments to the board at this time? Is there anyone present on the telephone that would like to address the board from the public? Seeing and hearing none, we'll move to agenda item number 6. We've got minutes from two board meetings previously, January 10th and January 15th. If there are no changes, we can take a motion to adopt both at once, I believe.
So moved.
Pushing the second one. Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt the minutes from the January 10th and February 15th board meeting. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the minutes are adopted. Okay, moving to new business. Item 7A is Resolution G1307, Lick Deposit Transportation System, authorizing a cost reimbursement agreement. Ted, would you and your staff walk us through key elements of this?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'd like to have Jim Hamseth come up to the table, if it's okay with the Chair. Very quickly, the next three items are actually resolutions that will allow us to enter into contracts to look at due diligence for two projects. One is expansion of the DMPS project, and the other two will be dealing with Skagway. Again, how ADA works on moving forward with due diligence is that we sign contracts with the different parties that they will reimburse us for this phase of the due diligence. And this is the first one's dealing with DMPS. And the Chair, I'd ask Jim to go through it very quickly, and we can move forward.
Thank you, Chair. The resolution G1307 is, as had described, authorizing ADA to execute a reimbursement agreement with Zazu Metals Corporation. ADA has completed a previous cost reimbursement agreement with Zazu on a phase one of due diligence on the Lick Deposit. The Lick Deposit is a zinc lead mine northwest of the Red Dog Deposit and the Colic Deposit. Zazu Metals has been working diligently over the few years, moving ahead on that project, trying to bring that to fruition. Our first due diligence was an overall review of their mine plan and the costs associated with that. We had Bear Del Bear as a subcontractor. The report was completed in December of 2009. And basically, to summarize that, the project, there was no obstacles in the project. Like all mining projects, it just depends on the cost of what it takes to do and how much the price of the ore is at any given time. Zaz has continued to work on the development of their prospect and their financing, and has asked Ada if Ada, and I would just like to summarize is that Zazu also has paid that reimbursement agreement off in full. 2 months after the report was done nominally, they had written us a check for $100,000 to pay off that reimbursement. We're approaching this because it's a very long multi-year project going forward, so we're kind of inching our way forward on various gates. So the first gate for us in due diligence was simply, does the project make sense? It was something more than we could just do with a casual observation of what's resulting in the due diligence. The second phase of due diligence is predominantly to look at the transportation system. While we're going to, you know, update the work, update the mine price, update the zinc forecast, the emphasis on this particular due diligence is look as, does the DMTS truly have the capacity in a road and a port aspect, as well as identifying any constraints to putting a new shed storage facility in, and starting to identify those contractual things that we have with tech that allow them to have priority on the road but not absolutely rights to the road, so we make sure those capacities are there. We anticipate that this due diligence work will take approximately $200,000, will be completed by the end of this calendar year. Zazu has agreed to the cost and are ready to sign the reimbursement agreement for the $200,000, and our request is for board approval of a resolution so we can continue.
Thank you. Other questions from board members?
This is Gary Wilkin. I have a question of Jim.
Go ahead.
Jim, are we at the point in the process, or when will that point arrive, that the designation is made whether this will be a public road or a private road, this 20 miles?
Mr. Wilkin, we're not at that point. And the reason we're not at the point is that we don't know who's going to finance it. If Ada was to do something more than just port expansion in the shed and also invest in the road, by its very definition, it would be very much like the DMTS road, which is a nominally a public access road with restrictions because it's industrial and things like that, with rights and priorities, as we've got with Red Dog.
All right, and so when will that determination be made?
Probably in 2014.
Okay. Okay, Madam Chair, that, of course, concerns me because of the DMTS issue. So I'll be voting, I support this, but I'll be voting no. I just want to make sure that there's a flag that will be set in this issue, that that's an answer that I'll expect sometime in the next 24 months. So thank you, Jim, for your explanation. Thank you.
Other questions from board members?
Yeah, I guess I didn't understand the vote no and the question. Not that I want to probe that, but Mr. Wilkins, if you could help us understand, maybe I'm missing something there.
Two things. The no vote will just set the mark that there's something missing in the proposal that I would wish to have in the future. I don't have any problem that this is going to pass, and I support the $200,000 and the effort. I just want to put a marker that I will continue to be concerned and in interested in whether this is a public road. And this has to do with the second issue. This has to do with the borough continuing to duck their responsibility to include, as the state assessor has mandated, that the DMTS is assessed value, and therefore is part of their full and true value. And then that speaks to the point that the borough is continuing through their shenanigans in the legislature to duck their responsibility in funding their portion of the school funding formula, which means that the rest of Alaska has to pick up their portion of that because of their legislative wrangling. So I just want to make sure that this 20 miles is clearly set out at the time that it becomes at the point that decision becomes pertinent. I want to make sure it's very clear that this will be, if indeed like the DMTS, and as I've heard that may or may not be, but if it's just like DMTS, that this road will be part of the full and true value for the borough and therefore will be part of their contribution to school funding so the rest of Alaska doesn't have to pick it up. So I just want to set a flag so people know that, and as this marches on over the next few years, it'll just be a question that I'll continue to ask until there's some answer one way or the other. Thank you, Wilson, for asking.
All right. Gary, thank you. No further questions.
Seeing no questions, no further questions, would anybody like to make a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for adoption of G1307. Any further discussion? Can we have a roll call vote?
Mr. Wilkins?
Nay.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Mr. Arvin?
Yes.
Commissioner Butcher?
Yes.
Commissioner Bell?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. The next two items both pertain to Skagway Ore Terminal, so as we look to Ted and Jim, we continue to stay at the table. Do you want to discuss one and then the other? And then I'm anticipating we should probably take the resolutions up separately, but do you want to describe the Skagway Ore issues concurrently?
To the chair, yes.
Okay.
That worked out. And just very quickly, I'll let Jim get into it. But as we've said, we've been working on looking at how we can expand the Skagway Ore Terminal to benefit the community. And if approximately, I believe it was 2 or 3 years ago, we did get bond authority to issue up to $65 million of bonds to expand this port authority. We're finally getting to the point where customers now are coming and want us to look at expanding the terminal, and these are the first two customers that are truly knocking on our door, ready to look at making a commitment. So, Jim, on the first one with Eagle Whitehorse.
Yes.
Or just a brief, excuse me, Chair, a brief explanation of the old.
Yes, sir. Chair and board. As Ted described, the last, I think it's two, Ted, but 2 years we have been working with the municipality and a number of mining corporations on their interest in expanding of the ore terminal. Our concern has been over the time is how to assure ourselves going forward with the terminal that we aren't wasteful with the property. In other words, we want to have a plan going forward of how to fit multiple users in versus our current user so we can maximize the space and provide as many job opportunities as we can for the community. We have legislative authorization. The predominance of that authorization, the reason for that and the expansion of the terminal was a mining company, Selwyn Mining Company. They had a tremendous amount of interest, but literally in the last 9 months, they've gone through a number of reorganizations. Their mining plan's not quite coming together, and they've actually faded from the picture. In the meantime, four other additional mining corporations have come up and expressed interest. And as Ted has indicated, we have two now that are anxious to get to the due diligence phase and potentially move ahead. The first tenant would be Eagle Whitehorse Minerals. This is a very interesting project in that it's really an export project versus a mining project. Eagle Whitehorse will be processing tailings at the Whitehorse Copper Mine site, which to process that and export magnetite, iron ore. So it'll all be done with material that's already out of the ground, if you will. So they have a 5-year plan to process the tailings at that facility, export that that product, nominally 360,000 tons a year, which is quite a large export. The current tenant, Capstone, moves 60,000 tons a year. Eagle Whitehorse has gone through the ESSA process in the Yukon. They've got their water permit, which is their key permit in place, and have indicated to us that they're willing to sign a reimbursement agreement. This reimbursement agreement is for $50,000 for our due diligence. We're putting the preponderance of the requirement on Eagle for the layout of how they'd like to use the terminal on Eagle. They've indicated that would be their preference as opposed to Ada being involved in a much more detailed engineering study of what's going on. I'd also like to take a moment that we have been also working with URS, an engineering contractor here in town, that's been helping us do an overall development plan. And while we don't have the final specifics, I'll be in Skagway next week meeting with the Port Commission and the Assembly Work Group to kind of lay out what URS has indicated. For us, the first component is that, yes, we can probably store as much as, in the space we have, we can probably store enough material to allow for the exporting of close to 1 million tons a year of product through the ore terminal, with very little difference in what the shed looks like now. Similar size, similar height, difference in the side walls that allow you to stack the pile up a little bit higher inside, a little bit difference in operations, what Capstone is doing to allow to maximize it, but no major true hoops we have to jump through to be able to get that. Of course, from the community's perspective, and this is an ongoing discussion, that's an aspect of truck loading, and that will be some of the due diligence to try to do this. But at that 1 million tons a year, it's nominally 60 trucks a day, which sounds like a lot until you realize it's about 3 to 4 trucks an hour. Those would be coming in and coming out, and they're 15 to 20 minutes in Skagway. As you're also aware of, the Department of Transportation has been working and evaluating the road system and the bridge, and they're proceeding along a parallel path, understanding where some of this tonnage is going. So, you know, all these pieces are in place, so it's appropriate now that we believe we have a way forward, and Eagle is willing to sign this reimbursement agreement. They believe they'll be ready to move product in early fall. Not quite sure there, and we're not sure that the facility would be done, so we're also looking at alternatives, but this is a very near-term operation, and it's a 5-year finite term. So our emphasis on this is going to be looking at the finance plan and how we manage that finance plan in terms of the overall terminal, and that would be Eagle Ventures, or Eagle Whitehorse.
You want to vote on this one, Chair, first? Or?
Well, and I knew part of the overview was going to be relevant to both, so it probably is a logical break. Let's see if there's questions from board members on Eagle. Robert?
Thank you. I just have two real brief questions. So in the conversations with the assemblies, you'll be able to talk about community impacts and those sorts of things in 9 times. It's quite a bit of volume.
Yes.
And you believe that it's not detrimental to the community to move that kind of tonnage through there?
No. In fact, with the Faro mine, they were moving 40 to 50 trucks a day in at one point in the mine. So the community has seen that. And that, I'm able to make sure that this is the max capacity if you were moving that amount of product. This next mine, over a 5-year period, would be 360,000 plus the 60 there, or 420,000 tons a year for the next 5. You've got the Chieftain mine coming on in 3 years, potentially, which would move another 120. By the time the next mine comes out, Eagle's off the table, and your tonnage comes back down. Capacity-wise, that's what's there. I'm not sure we're ever going to see a sustained throughput to that level. But if then all those things happen, this is the kind of product we could store with the existing dock and the existing depth of water and the movement of product.
As well as the community has had experience.
Right? Yes, and the wellhead community has had that experience.
Okay, and then the only other item that I had is the cost reimbursement agreement, at least in my set of records here. I apologize for not signing the email last night. I'm very crammed day. When I was going through the deeper materials after initial review, I noticed the cost reimbursement agreement that we were provided is actually for Chieftain. It looks like a duplicate of Chieftain next. And are the agreements substantially the same?
They are. They're substantially sustained, except the number is a little bit smaller, and we specify what we're going to do there and specify the requirements of Eagle to supply us more detail. And we did note that as well. And if Ted, it's all right, I can send the board out this afternoon the Eagle reimbursement agreement.
It'd be nice to see it, but if there's exactly the same, I have no problem with voting.
And so, for those members on the phone, thank you, Robert, for pointing that out. Under in our board packet, under tab 7D, the memo is the first several pages there, and the resolution are specific to Eagle. But when you look at the cost reimbursement agreement, that is Chieftain's document. So what we could do, the appropriate documents in front of us, so we proceed and then just get
to the chair, we can get those. Jim, do we have copies of those documents that
yes,
into the...
I'm looking. Okay, so then what I would
do you not have this? Is that...
No, the way the packet was bound, it looks like so. Okay, I was trying to think, wait, let me not call my colleague Brian. Commissioner Butcher. Commissioner Butcher has the... We know the documents exist. What was just found in our... What was found in the board packet is Chieftain. So, and let's... I think... If you can describe if there's anything else besides Chieftain in the document, and I would imagine the dollar amount.
The two differences are the dollar amount, and on page 2 of the memo, the development activities covered by the proposed cost agreement, the very beginning of page 2 of the memo, those 3 points are what's different than the scope on item number 2 on the reimbursement agreement. Everything else is the same.
And so it sounds like if documents were downloaded from the portal, you probably have the right document. It's just inadvertently bound into the packet. So if the board members are comfortable making a motion, we can do that. If not, we can move to the next item. But I'll look to the board to see if...
Madam Chair, I would move that resolution number G1305 be voted on.
Okay. There's a motion?
This is Gary. I would second that.
Okay. Any further discussion on G1505 for Skagway River Terminal Eagle Whitehorse?
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Go ahead.
This is Gary. Jim, where in the process is the analysis done if the highway needs to be upgraded in some manner by not only this action but the one we're going to talk about in 7C also? Is that part of this whole consideration as we march down through this for the next couple of years?
Mr. Wilkin, the answer is yes. It is part of the consideration, but it's not necessarily a limiting factor. The Department of Transportation has indicated they have some concerns with one of the bridges, but they also saying, well, gee, if you're only really moving 40, 50 trucks at a time, it isn't a big deal. But we're aware of that and going forward and be working with them in terms of how the loads come up to make sure that there's no impact. But they have indicated they have no problem with Eagle Minerals starting up, and that is the largest load of the mines that we're talking about that'll phase in over the next 5 years.
So,
but it's something that we need to be aware of. So as we complete the due diligence and the contract, while it's not our responsibility, everyone going forward, including the folks that are getting the trucking contracts, need to understand if there's any limitations. That'd be one of the risks, quite frankly, Mr. Lookin, is that if the DOT restricts the number of trucks proceeding down the road to a certain amount, how will that impact the revenue stream, and do the various backers have the wherewithal to make the monthly lease payments to us?
I guess my thought is this is something we and the mining company don't want to be caught unawares or trying to play catch up. It'll obviously be more expensive, and it'll be more expensive because time has marched on, and it'll be more expensive because it'll be under some sort of duress to get it done. So if it's all right with the chair and all right with the board, not quite sure how to ask this, but I would like to have some indication in our file that DOT is aware of this and has passed some sort of formal opinion as to whether this freight can be moved over the road, and some sort of a horizon. In other words, we think this will be safe up to 60 loads and that for the next 10 years or something along that line, so that we know and the developer knows that DOT is aware and is taking a look at it, and we're not caught unawares when we start to haul ore. So I'll leave that to the chair on how to do that, but I think we should be very interested in that just to look down the road.
Well, Gary, your comments. Thank you for that, and your comments will be reflected in the minutes. And I think we can ask that as this analysis comes together, that the analysis can reflect what. There's a lot of concurrent conversations that have been going on from the governor and the premier to the U.S., the Alaska Department of Transportation and their equivalents on the Yukon, down to the community level, Whitehorse and Skagway. And several of us have participated in some of these forums. So it's certainly, there's work underway, communications underway, and I think it can be easily reflected in the work.
Yeah. Yes, Chair.
Just quickly, through the chair to Board Member Wilkins, is Jim, in a long way, said yes to what you're saying, that part of the due diligence that will come to the board before we move forward with the project would analyze the capacity and verify that DOT says that we do have the capacity. So, Board Member Wilkins, we will not bring a project to you that doesn't have that analysis as part moving forward before we do the project.
Sure. That's great. Thank you for your consideration.
It's one of our key risks, and I would just simply like to note the DOT had a relatively significant meeting with all of these proposed mine companies that we've been talking to and talking to us this past January in Vancouver to begin that discussion on just those issues. So there's a very intense, actually, work proceeding with DOT and their understanding of the road load and all the companies. In fact, they put out a key report that we've also examined as relates to what those loads are going forward. So they are very aware of the situation.
Great. So thank you, Jim, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second on G1305. Any other questions or discussion, Brian?
Jim, you
Madam Chair.
Oh, how about Brian, then we'll go to Ron.
You had mentioned that it's a finite five-year agreement. Do we feel pretty comfortable that it will be a five-year period and it won't extend any further or become something longer?
Commissioner Butcher, that I'm sorry I said 5 years. It's five-ish years. There is a very finite volume of tailings to be processed. There is no mine, so we know the resource is fixed. If they have startup problems, they're not able to process 360,000 tons a year, 300,000 tons a year, it will extend out. And that will be one of the variables that we look at, what their term is on the lease, what the payment structure is, and more importantly, how that space would be used by other folks coming forward in the overall blocking.
I was in Skagway yesterday with the mayor, actually, at the terminal, and you know, they're optimistic that in the future there will be more and it will continue to grow. So I was just curious. Do we see the existing terminal as being able to supply some of the needs we see, or is there potentially expansion that may occur in the next years?
The existing footprint that both on slab and unimproved land that ADA currently has under lease has the capacity to have a building that would be able to store the appropriate amount of volumes related to shipping on the million tons a year. We don't see a million tons a year in any of the mines going forward. It's probably going to be 750 to 850,000 tons a year. The major constraint, let me rephrase, the seaward constraint is the working of a coordination of cruise ships and ore carriers. Even at a million ton nominal a year, that's about a load out of an ore ship twice a month. So it's the potential for conflict is there and would require some additional coordination. And that's one of the things that we also have in discussions with the municipality as they move forward on their dock development and replacement. So we're, again, part of this, rather involved due diligence going forward is also looking on the community side what their plans are for the dock. Some of the dredging things they're talking about, which could actually require a larger capacity ship. When we've got two or three proposed alternatives we're going to be proposing to the community that would be done, which includes relocating where the ships are loaded as well to alleviate some of those things going forward. But the peninsula itself, as it exists now, with some modest expansion as you put sheet piles in and move mature around, in our mind, can handle loads on all the forecasted mines coming through and when they might come into place.
And Brian, do you still have a question?
Yeah, I do. Thank you very much. Maybe a question for Ted. I know it's a little bit early in the process, and whether it's a consistent number of trucks per day or an increased number of trucks per day, do we have or do we need to have, because I didn't see it in the information in the packet, an affirmative statement by the municipality of Skagway that they are in support of this project? And is that important to have at this point, given that local political winds seem to change on a fairly regular basis?
Through the chair to board member Arvin, it's early in the process. Part of the process that we have to go through with any due diligence or any new contract is that we do go to the community before we approve the contract or sign a contract for their, on, especially with the bond. If we're going to issue a bond, we have to have approval from the community for anything over $6 million. Any development project, when we issue a contract, we do have to seek advice from the community. So before we move forward with a project, an expansion like this, we would be working with the community and have in that due diligence for when we go for approval, that communication for the board. So I don't think that we actually need it at this point in time. I can say, and Jim's getting antsy, is that the community has been involved with this project already and actually promoting wanting Chuck to go through this terminal. But before we move forward with the full approval of the project, we will have communication from the community for the board to see.
Mr. Arvin, there are two components to that. One is the checks, as Ted had indicated, when you get the approval, for example, for Chuck Eaton, which is a 5-year. To move ahead with the Chieftain project, one of the key constraints there is the current lease. The lease, we will need to have a new ground lease to be able to accommodate the length of term that Chieftain would want to have. That's part of the reason we've hired URS and are working on a much larger look at going forward so that we can demonstrate to the community what's coming in, the kind of volumes coming in, how we see it being handled, the size of the facility, because the community has to approve the lease extension, which becomes also a de facto approval of going forward with the project.
Ron, did you have a follow-up?
Well, no, I think maybe that answered it, but I guess at this point, again, and I acknowledge that it's probably just a little bit early in the process and there's some preamble that needs to be done, but I would suggest that getting Municipality of Skagway concurrence and support of this project is probably better to have sooner than later, and I would encourage staff to pursue that as it moves forward, and I support this action item.
Any additional questions from board members on this?
No.
Okay. Then ready for a roll call vote on resolution G1305.
Mr. Wilkin.
Aye.
Mr. Sheldon.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Mr. Arvin.
Yes.
Commissioner Butcher.
Yes.
Commissioner Bell?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. We'll move to item G1306, which has many of the similar issues and points that we just discussed, but this is specific to Chieftain Metals. So if Ted and Jim want to point out the key elements that we need to be aware of here.
Again, Chair, this one does have the right cost reimbursement agreement, and I apologize to the board for that mistake on my side. But again, this is, as Jim said, a much larger project. This will involve expansion, I believe, of the ore terminal. And again, as the board member said, we will be having the community involved in DOT. And Jim, if you could just quickly discuss the project and what this reimbursement agreement.
Thank you, Ted. Board Chairman. The Chieftain Mine is a nominal 20-year mine life. This is the Tulsiquotchief Mine in British Columbia. Some of you may be familiar with the original Tulsiquotchief. When it was Redfern looking at opening that mine, they were going to bring the harbor barge down through Juneau and I think transship from Juneau to Skagway. They're going to drive the ore out up through the Yukon into Skagway. It is a lead-zinc-copper mine. With the terminal expansion being built to accommodate the copper, lead, zinc, copper mine, with the terminal being expanded to handle the copper and the zinc, approximately 120,000 tons a year, 80,000 tons of zinc and 40,000 tons of copper a year. The lead that comes out of the mine will be a much smaller amount that will be shipped in sealed containers, not through ADA facility, but through the AML facility that is currently moving lead from the Bellaquino mine in a similar way in sealed containers out through Skagway. In this particular case, again, we're looking at in both cases, but our due diligence is very much defined on fitting the components in on the plot that we have, and assuring that the design and the cost are appropriate, that what we'd be building and creating the finance plan going forward that would accommodate ADA being paid back. Everything else in our discussion has been very much the same. It still is the perception here that between Eagle, the magnetite, and the copper, that the facility will, for the most part, be on the existing slab and not require any major expansion off the slab into the new area with ground prep. And the one thing that's on this project that's probably different if Eagle was just on their own is that we'll be examining the need for a new ship loader and how this project could accommodate the cost of a new ship loader and sharing with other ones. That ship loader is important because of a little bit different product with the zinc. We want to have a better environmental aspect. We want to be going into a ship loader can be moved a little bit faster than our current one. And that will accommodate other loads as well and make the shipping a little bit more efficient in terms of the loading. Because of the longer nature of this project, we're able to actually look at that ship loader, how it fits in with the community's needs and what they want to do with the cruise ships, which our ship loader has a bit of an interference. The Eagle project is much smaller and couldn't necessarily on its own handle the cost of a new ship loader. Everything else in the discussion has been the same.
Questions from board members? Is there a motion from board members?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second on resolution G1306, Skagway Terminal project specific to Chieftain Metals. Take a moment, look to see if there's any final questions. Then let's move to a roll call vote.
Mr. Wilkin?
Aye.
Mr. Sheldon?
Yes.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Mr. Arvin?
Yes.
Commissioner Butcher?
Yes.
Commissioner Bell?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. The next two items are resolutions relating to regulations of ADA. And the first one is G1303, new regulations that relate to the New Market Tax Credit Loan Guarantee Program. Ted, can you and your staff give an overview?
And yes, Chair, and for your instruction, we'll do a brief overview and be able to answer questions. I'd like Mike Katsey to come to the table. Mike Katsey has been the lead on this project of developing regulations for this program. Again, just fairly quickly, this new tool that we're looking at is the ability to participate in new market tax credit programs that are a federal program. This was given to us by the legislature and the governor last year in SB 66. And I'll let Mike go through the program in a couple minutes, but just very quickly, we've gone through the public hearing request. We had no concerns through that request. And again, I'd like to very quickly have Mike go through an overview of the tool and then the regulations.
Right. Predominantly, this is a program that will, what we believe is help incentivize the use of new markets tax credits in the state of Alaska. It's a successful federal program that's used extensively around the country, and we felt that it was relatively underused here in Alaska, and we thought it was a good tool for incentivizing private sector investment in underserved and underdeveloped areas in the state. Predominantly what our program does is provide a guarantee for the leveraged loan portion of a new markets tax credit transaction. The applicant receives an authorization for a loan guarantee up to 100%, shops that to lending institutions, and then the lending institutions, if they want to accept that guarantee, will then move forward with the loan with the applicant. If that applicant cannot get a lending institution to loan, or two lending institutions to loan on that guarantee, then that applicant has the opportunity to bring that loan back, that guarantee back to ADA, ask us to convert it to a direct loan, and then ADA would review that application again to see whether we would like to do a direct loan. That's basically the program in its most simplest form. I believe you all have a sectional analysis and also a diagram of, again, a very rough diagram of what I believe the flow of that process would be. Do you want me to go through the sectional analysis, or do you want me to just leave it open to questions in general?
Maybe leave it to questions, and just to restate, the legislation has passed. We've gone out to the public on the for the regulations, and we certainly have seen, there's been some capacity in Alaska for this, and we're seeing an increased awareness and interest in this. So I look to the board for any questions on the regulations. Robert?
Just one general question. So I know we're implementing regulations here. It's a related question, Madam Chair, if you indulge me, though. The timing and the availability of new market tax credits, do you expect it to be renewed and to continue on into the future?
Mr. Sheldon, has been renewed or reauthorized by the Congress for the next 2 years, $3.5 billion for each of the next 2 years. New markets tax credits gets renewed for 2 years, it seems every 2 years, and it always goes into this fuzzy session where Congress uses it as a... everyone says they don't want to do it, then they do it. So we don't know. I mean, it's a congressional thing, but there are allocations out for the next 2 years.
May I continue? Okay, then in relation to that, then there's confidence that there's folks able to garner share of these credits too, and actually... and approach financial institutions to move forward?
Right. Mr. Shelton, there was $3.5 billion, I think, authorized by Congress for the most recent year, and was oversubscribed, I think, to a tune of $21 billion.
And that's what my interest is do we have the cloud in Alaska, or is there something else? Does regulation properly position assistance, if you will, by having regulations properly position Alaskan-based lending institutions to engage in this? Do you believe that it covers those bases?
Yes, I do, because the tax credit allocations are made to community development entities around the nation who apply on a competitive basis for these allocations. several CDEs around the country, many CDEs around the country have, as part of their area of scope, Alaska included. So any project, it's the project itself that needs to rise to the top to get an allocation of those tax credits. From there, once those tax credits are allocated to the project, then it should have, but that project should be on an equal footing with any other project. And specifically now, because projects are really being determined on their the eligibility of the census area, so they're looking at those severely distressed areas in particular.
And through the chair to board member Sheldon, when we were talking to the financial institutions as we were looking at this legislation and going through the regulation process, they thought that us being able to provide a guarantee will help them to be able to participate in the program.
May I continue one more time?
Mr. Sheldon.
Thank you. And I don't mean to segue too much, but in our packet we have fiscal year 13 loan participations by economic region. I just wanted to say that I think new market tax credits are a wonderful way to perhaps we can enable other areas that are less advantaged, at least in terms of seeing the benefits of the authority. I'm very hopeful that this will assist with their success in the future and funding items that for the time being might seem out of reach. Thank you.
Other questions from the board?
How is EDA compensated for its efforts?
Mr. Hughes, through the loan guarantee, there's a fee for the loan guarantee. Issuance of that, I believe it's a 1.5% of the principal. And then if ADA makes a plus costs, and then if ADA makes a loan on that, then of course we determine the interest rate and costs on that.
And the rate, I believe, on that, board member Hughes, is the same type of rate that we do through our loan participation program.
But the 1.5% is the fee for
doing a guarantee.
Issuing the guarantee, yes.
Correct. Okay. And we are limited. The legislature did know that this was a new tool and wanted to ensure that we're using it in the most responsible way. So they did put a limit of a total of $40 million of guarantees and loans that we could use through the project at any one time. We could only have $40 million. And if this is wildly successful, then they did say that then please come back to us and we will increase the amount or the ability if needed.
All right.
Other questions from the board? Let's entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second on resolution G1303, adopting new regulations for the new markets tax credit loan guarantee program. Any further discussion? We have a roll call vote.
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Mr. Sheldon.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Mr. Arvin.
Yes.
Commissioner Butcher.
Yes.
Commissioner Bell.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Well, thank you. And as we shift to the next item, resolution G1304, which is regulations related to our procurement practices, I just want to underscore again many of the entities that we see through the legislative grants have become aware of the experience of the Manelik Elder Care Facility in Kotzebue and Covenant House, and are really looking at how to participate in the New Markets Tax Credit, what lessons learned there are. And I think that this tool will be utilized quickly, so it'll be interesting to go forward. So moving to G1304, Ted, do you want to bring?
You bet. Chair, may I bring Chris Retz forward? He is designated as our procurement officer right now. Just very quickly, this is the second set of regulations that we've been working on for the last 7 to 8 months. Again, I believe this was passed last year that allows ADA more flexibility in how we do procurement by allowing us to develop our own set of regulations. Again, as Chris and Jerry Judae, our lawyer, worked very hard on these, one of the things, and Chris, maybe you could just hit this really quickly, is that even though we have been granted the ability to develop our own procurement regulations, we still have to follow the spirit of the law under section. Chris?
Well, I can get into that. Yeah, I can explain a little bit.
Very quickly is that there are regulations, but we still have to follow the spirit of the law on procurement through the state. Again, we went through a public hearing process. This was, in essence, a full public hearing process that had to follow the administrative rules on public hearing. And Chris, again, I don't believe that
we didn't receive a single comment. Though we proactively went out into the community and says, "Hey, tell us." And we had a number of people that had indicated an interest in the regulations based on when AEA was attempting to do its regulations, and we brought those people in because they had made some comments during the legislative hearings about regulations and said, well, if you show us the regulations you have, then maybe we'll support AEA adopting its own regulations. And so I reached out to those folks and said, here's what we're doing for ADA, and this is if the authority chooses to go forward, these would be a model that you could possibly look at for the Energy Authority adopting similar regulations.
And the board may recall that we adopted what they appropriately called emergency regulation and then set forth on this process to get to the point we're at now.
So, Chris, could you give a brief?
Okay, what I'll do is I'll first give you a little bit of a background from where I came from as to how we got to this point. I've been a procurement officer in the state for well over 25 years. I was involved when 3630 was first adopted, the Model Procurement Code. I actually got to participate in legislative drafting of those regulations. Subsequently, I've been involved in numerous re-edits of 3630 over the years. But when I got to ADA, what I discovered was that pretty much every corporation in the state had its own procurement rules to follow except for ADA and AEA. And I began to run into a couple of issues sometimes as we were doing procurement with respect to the authority that ADA had to take actions on its own behalf, having to try to fit that into the same kind of authority that agencies have, because ADA is in its mission is just a little different than line agencies. So to that end, I suggested that we would go out and pursue having our own regulations similar to what corporations had. In looking at what other corporations had, I did see some shortfalls with respect to some of the accountability that was in their regulations, as well as making things reasonably simple in terms of how the Attorney General's office would be involved in assisting and administering these regulations. So what Ted said with respect to following the spirit of 3630, the Model Procurement Code, and the regulations that the Department of Administration adopted under that, I actually started with, in terms of drafting, the 60 pages of 3630 and the 100 and some pages of the 2AEC12, and then whittled it down. Took out the things that appeared to be not relevant for ADA, and then also tried to determine in which areas might it work that we could just simply reference what's already out there. And one area where we did reference current statute was particularly under Section 7, legal and contractual remedies, because this is also, these regulations will also be, what's the appropriate word here, administered or overseen by the Department of Law, that we would be, following them appropriately, and the Department of Law would be who will be defending us in the case of any contract claims, protests, or disputes, that instead of reinventing the wheel, I just said, well, let's adopt what's in statute, because statute it has quite a few policies and guidelines with respect to contractual remedies, and they work, and the public is aware of them. And so we adopted those by reference, as well as the arbitration procedures that DOT went through and adopted under regulations in lieu of trying to adopt separate arbitration procedures for managing that. The rest of it, though, is well, I should say, and we also adopted pretty much most of the definitions that were used in 3630 and 2AC12 using the procurement officer and whatnot. Things where we did separate a little bit instead of under 3630 where it has, this is how you do construction, this is how you do non-construction, we basically took the approach that procurement is procurement. And in areas under relating to source selection, competitive bidding, competitive sealed proposals, or alternative procurements, if there were specific things relating to construction that were in the code that appeared to be relevant, such as an issue related to bid shopping for construction contractors. And the way that the state had tried to resolve that was basically on construction bids, you got to provide notice within 5 days who your subs are. And I know that was a big issue over the years, and we adopted that, saying, yeah, we want to make sure people that are bidding on ADA jobs aren't bid shopping, and things of that nature. That's how I got to the regulations. We drafted the regulations. I put this together. I ran it through staff, ran it through Jay Drury, and I talked about it, who is going to be the new ADA procurement officer starting Monday. I briefed staff management here, and we looked at it, and then also Jerry and I have worked on it, and then we've also sent it down to Steve Weaver at the Department of Law, who's already scrubbed it a couple times. So it's pretty close to its final form. However, there may be some other minor edits here. I can go through section by section and identify certain areas that might be substantially different, or whatever you would like to do for further discussion regarding these. If you got questions.
I think you've done a nice job of describing the invaluable expertise that you brought to this process, and also reminding us why some of the things that ADA needs to do to move at the speed of business and be nimble don't fit into how other agencies have to work through administration and DOT and other agencies. For the folks on the phone, we have Jerry Judé at the table, Chris Rutz, and Ted. So let's just pause and see if board members have questions.
None for me. This is Gary. Thank you.
It's an art form. Is this your parting present to ADA? This is your gift?
Yes, this is my parting present to ADA. This is my last day officially working for ADA. So I was hoping I could have done this last month, but no, this is my last day. And I really, I want to thank the board and Ted and both organizations for allowing me to work here. I mean, having the opportunity to work here for 9 years, I think it's been great. It's been a great experience for me, and I think having had the ability to work on the state side, specifically in a line agency, and then coming to ADA, what I tried to build into the regulations is a couple of things. One is make sure there's transparency. You know, whatever you do, people need to understand why you do what you do, why you take the actions you're doing, but also build in some flexibility and clarity. Because oftentimes the procurement code just confuses people. They look at it, well, what does this mean? Well, do I have to do that if I'm doing construction or if I'm working for this agency? And we've had some of that confusion in our own shop through the years with respect to, well, is this a construction that follows the DOT procedures, or this is a DOA thing that we have to follow the DOA procedures? And each agency had its own procedures that were stacked on top of the regs, that were stacked on top of the statutes. So it actually compounded some of our internal processes. So that's my hope. But at the same time, I hope that it's going to allow ADA, and I think the biggest issue is it gives ADA the authority to make its decisions. Now, the board still has the authority with respect to appeals, final decisions on appeals of protest, but the rest of that authority is delegated down to Ted to take action, and then to the chief procurement officer. And you have a balance of authority between Ted and the chief procurement officer. Appeals on claims or protests will first go to the procurement officer, and then, or I should say, protests or claims would go through the procurement officer, try to be solved at the lowest level possible. Then appeals would come to Ted. Protest appeals will ultimately come to you for a final decision. And that was based on what the Department of Law told us, that that's a regulatory kind of process, and it needs to be left there. So,
thank you.
So if you've got any other questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
I have a comment, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yes.
All right. So, Chris, you were very patient with me about a year ago walking through some of the proposed changes and so forth, and I'm delighted to see some final regulation here. I wanted to thank you personally for all the effort that you have put in on this, and I was ignorant that this would be your last day. So what I would propose to do is that we table this in perpetuity so that... Please strike that.
Board Member Sheldon, we did ask Jerry about that.
But you know, I'm delighted to see, especially with some of the items that are upcoming down the path. I know we have some pending legislation this session, and it'll be good to have this in place. It's codified. And so thank you very much for all of your efforts.
Would you like to make a motion, Mr. Sheldon?
Yes, please.
Motion to...
Madam Chair.
Oh. Ron?
I'm sorry to jump in here, but... maybe I don't have the most recent copy of what was just spoken to, but I don't see really anything changed here except for on page 1, section 12 repealed, and then on page 2, the authorities changed to the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority. But when I look through the rest of the document, I don't see any changes. I don't see any language changes.
Because we started with a fresh document, Chris?
Right, yeah. The issue here was this was all new. All we had was that for the temporary regs was a one page that pretty much said we were going to follow 3630 and 2AAC12 until we adopted our own regs. So all of this that you see in the document is brand new.
And so the change that Ron...
Okay, well, that helps me.
Yeah, it's all changed in effect, yes.
And, Chris, you were just describing it, and I think it could be helpful just for information. It doesn't have to be right now. But as we entered into this process a year and a half ago, there was a little matrix that showed the authority for key actions and who was the decision maker and who would be appealed to. And I think that would be very helpful, especially if we have staff, board, or public questions. So that, I just remember that being a great tool.
And we can record that to the board.
Okay.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot simpler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple pages, a nice snapshot.
Maybe even one page.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions from board members? We have a motion and a second. We have a motion and a second. Any other questions? Then let's move to a roll call.
Mr. Wilkin.
Aye.
Mr. Sheldon.
Yes.
Mr. Hughes.
Yes.
Mr. Arvin.
Yes.
Commissioner Butcher.
Yes.
Commissioner Bell.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Yay! It's hard to appreciate until you spend time in state government what amount of work that was, really. Okay, the next two items are on the agenda, items F, Executive Session, Kenai Offshore Ventures, and item G, Executive Session, Helay Clean Coal Plant. I just want to look to see if there's, before we move into Executive Session, anything we should be aware of? And has our guest, we anticipated GDEA's presence for Helay Clean Coal after 11?
We were hoping that he would be here by 11:30, so
okay.
I would suggest that with Jerry, maybe we can go into one executive session.
I'd recommend you do both same time, so you don't have to come out and then go back into it.
So then we could do a quick one on KOB, and Sherry is right now upstairs tracking where Corey is.
Okay. So then we need a motion to go into executive session to discuss matters. Remind us. Sorry.
The first one would be about Kenai Offshore Ventures. Executive session would be appropriate there because we're going to discuss litigation and attorney-client communication matters. And the second topic would be the Helay Clean Coal Plant, which also involves litigation, attorney-client communication, and confidential financial information.
Would anybody like to make that motion?
So moved.
So moved, yeah. We have a motion for Mr. Hughes, second for Mr. Sheldon. And to go into executive session, I remind people that we will need a second call-in. Do we need?
Yes. The call-in numbers were emailed out to everybody with the codes who need it.
Okay.
And we will be setting up in the...
So board members are going to physically relocate, and so Mr. Wilkin, Mr. Arvin, do you have your numbers? Do you know how to dial in? Okay, we'll meet you in the other space in a matter of moments.
Yep, good to go. Okay, I'll thanks. Call back in a few minutes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Susan?
Yeah.
Hello? Who was that?
That was Harry.
Harry Wilkin.
Okay. Let me go get the other phone.
Yeah, okay. You're going to... I think we're on a pretty fast clip here.
Right. I'm hoping it works at 4-1.
Well, I have three years.
I'd love to get on sooner than that.
I would love to get on sooner than that. That's the point at which I just stand up.
Yeah.
I don't think does AEA have any action items?
There's a resolution on regs.
Oh, yeah, not a big...
Village energy efficiency program.
The only thing they have. The presentation.
So it would have been 74 or 75. He put his on.
The one thing that's not on there is that we want to discuss how we do an update on the gas project.
Lewis up there. We bought an old building.
Corrugated tin?
No.
Because I still have corrugated tin in my warehouse up there.
But it was a lot of tongue and groove. Good quality.
Did you use it?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because we had some of that too, but then they got rid of that.
No, we ended up taking it up and using it. But anyway, it was a winter hauling up, and then summer it was more like I thought it was.
Hello, Mira.
How are you? How are you?
I'm doing well. Have you been traveling much?
Well, I have been, but it's been all pure pleasure. Yeah, we'll make a copy.
Take the mute off. Okay, mute's off. The recorder's back on.
Okay. We're back into the regular session of the ADA board meeting. And if we can verify that we have Gary, have you joined us back online?
Yes, Gary is here. Thank you.
And Ron? Okay, we have Gary. We'll listen for Ron. Do we have any other members of the public that happen to call in?
We have Elisa Ross from Washington, D.C. She was in that beginning. I believe she's still
there. That's from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. We have a quorum. We're still waiting for Ron, who will likely join us on the phone again. And we're at item 8 in the agenda, which is the director's comments.
Yes, Chair. Really quickly, again, we have reports on the loan activities, and we also have a new report that is part of our resolution on...
Is that Ron?
Hello.
Oh.
Okay, great. We've just resumed, and we're on item 8, and Ted was just highlighting some changes in the director's portion of our packet.
And that is quickly a report that goes along with the resolution that allowed ADA to invest monies into evaluating projects. And that gives a list of the projects, how much we have budgeted to the projects, then a description of those projects. So if there's any questions, I'm glad to answer those. And then just very quickly, Chair Jim would like to come up and give a very brief update on the Mustang Road, if that's okay with you.
That sounds good. Jim, if you'll give an update on Mustang Road.
Thank you, Chair and Board. Mustang Road, as you know, from approval of funding, we well have funded Mustang Road. All permits are in place with the state. They're on their second, at least their second gravel lift this week on the road. Expectations of that road will be done, if you will, before seasoning by the end of April. And then ready for operations in September. As what happens in the summer is it just sits there and bakes and melts off all the moisture and things like that. The Grassl does some compaction, but they've made tremendous progress and are essentially on the road to completion, so to speak.
Exciting.
Okay. Chair, really quickly, two other things I just remembered. One is just a very brief update on legislation. Quickly, as I said in my report, AA will be giving a quick briefing on the potential gas project that ADA and AEA may be involved in. That legislation has gone through completely the Senate and is in House Finance. Then we also have legislation that deals with direct finance, the ability of doing direct financing for projects and guarantees. That was split out of SB 23 and is its own vehicle right now. That went through House and Labor and is in House Finance. Will be heard probably this next week. I'll be in Juneau again, like every week. The commissioners are probably tired of seeing me in the halls. But we still believe that that legislation will have a good chance of going through because, in essence, the legislation that approved the direct financing was in SB 23 and has already been approved by the Senate. So it would go back and hopefully just bounce out very quickly.
And on legislation, is it? Oh, it's allowable. On legislation, am I correct in thinking that under the AEA board meeting that we'll talk a little bit more thoroughly on SB 23, the entire
yes.
energy? So there'll be a chance for board members to talk to to
ADA
and
AEA
staff currently on that.
And just quickly on regulations, we've gotten two of our three main regulation packages through. The last one that we're continuing to work on is the SETS regulations. We've gone through a public hearing process, taken those comments and put them back, or revised the regulations, and went out to a second public hearing process. We are going to try to get the board, the subcommittee together to look at the final package and then hopefully bring it to the board at the April 25th meeting. So, Board Member Sheldon, I'll be working and seeing what your time frame is, but we can probably get those to you before you head out on your trip so that you have time to look at them before we meet.
Thank you.
Any board member questions of Ted?
Madam Chair, I have two, please.
Mm-hmm.
This is Gary. Ted, in reference to your... Actually, I have three questions. In reference to your board update of March 24th, in the first paragraph having to do with Senate Bill 23, you say, we have hired a team to analyze the project and are in the pre-feasibility phase. Is that team public? And also, while you're answering that, you ran into some turbulence about 6 weeks ago with some press that wanted all 15 names of those that responded to the gas trucking request for proposals. Could you kind of tell me where we are with this team being public and also the plan for releasing the results of that review?
Through the chair to board member Wilkin. On the 15 names, we did release the names to the public. I believe
yes,
that every one of those names were released.
It was around the time, it seems like, was it early March that Gene and I did a series of five meetings in Fairbanks? Was the timing approximately then we had a document that was shareable?
Yeah, then the responders to the letters of interest went out very early.
Right, in January.
No, it was certainly by early March.
It's not before that?
It was early before that.
Yes, they have gone out. They were in the report that we sent Board Member Wilkin. The team right now that's looking at this is, it's in, again, like you said, the pre-feasibility stage. The team that we have comprised isn't public because that will be part of the process down the line. Right now we have two engineering firms working with this and financial advisors to see if the project is feasible and to analyze the potential turnkey offers. In that team is the main engineering firm is HDR. There's a subcontracting firm that's working with HDR called MEI. MEI is a firm that's experts on building liquefaction plants. They've built approximately 300 across the world. We also have a firm that is looking at the trucking aspects and analyzing the numbers from there. So the goal is to have something done within the next month that would come to the board as a report, and then we would move through the full process once we've analyzed whether or not the true project can come in within projected goals of the governor and the community. Basically, with that, the cost. You know, the goals of the community are within $10 to Fairbanks for gas, and then a range of an average range of $15 to the burner tip for residents and
residents.
All right. So just so I'm clear, I understand that under the request that you had for a Freedom of Information Act, you released the 15 names. I understand that. And then there was what the press was after was more detail, and you had set that off pending this review, I think, that you just talked about. So the information that you had committed to about 6 weeks ago, that will be forthcoming in the next month or two. Is that what I'm to understand?
Gary and Jerry, you could help me on this. What we released were the proposals from people that did agree to have them released.
Yes.
I believe we did not release the ones under our statute that they did not agree to release the information. So I believe there's approximately three or four respondents, and I could get those names to you, Board Member Wilkin, that did not agree to share the information. That all the names were released, and then all the packages that the respondents agreed to have the information released was given to the press. But I could get you a list of the ones that.
And I think that might be helpful for everybody is that as a follow up to today's board meeting, that there is maybe a one pager that has, because there was a brief 2 to 4 sentence description even that was part of the public document as well. So if you can share with all the board members something that is repeatable, that I think would be helpful.
You bet.
Well, if SB 23 passes, then of course this will ramp up very quickly, and a lot of this information will become public. So I just wanted a status report as to how that had all sorted itself out, because there was a bit of there was a flurry there for a few days, and I thought you handled it very well and pushed back a bit with regulation and just common sense as far as I was concerned. So I just wanted an update, Ted, and anything you can give us, of course, fine, but don't, I wouldn't want you to put a whole bunch of work in to report to us that we're going to see in a matter of a month or two anyhow. So thank you for that response. The other question I had was yesterday, and I think it was House Labor and Commerce, is there a bill that has been amended that's going to require ADA to get legislative approval of projects that we don't require now? And it, does that amendment have some, does it have legs?
Actually, I'm trying to think very quickly. House Bill, there's been some confusion on Senate Bill 27 and House Bill, no, excuse me, Senate Bill 23 and House Bill 74 when it hit House Labor and Commerce. They were companion bills, and at the point in time that they finally started moving through House Labor and Commerce, they wanted to ensure the several legislators that each part of the process or parts of the bills were looked at. So what they did, Gary, was in Senate Bill 23, they stripped out the direct financing and moved that bill to House Finance. And then with House Bill 74, they stripped out the gas language and the dividend language to have that go separately by itself. And that bill, HB 74, with the original language, moved to House Finance by itself. So there were no changes made to the direct financing wording. There was a couple changes to the wording on the gas project, and Sarah can...
And we'll take that up as we convene the AEA meeting.
But the direct financing wording is going through
as 74
with no changes, and no changes to limit the ability of ADA to finance projects.
So yesterday in Labor and Commerce, House Labor and Commerce, there weren't any amendments having to do with projects needing to come back to the legislature for approval before ADA proceeds?
No.
Okay, I'll go backwards and find out where that information came from. So, okay, thank you for your response. Thank you, Madam Chair.
If you want to give me a call, and if you hear something, I definitely like to know if something has started going through the legislature that we didn't know.
Any other questions, for the Director? Okay, then we'll move to board comments, and we'll start on the phone. Gary, any board comments?
Yes, thank you. I just want to tell you that I've had three different people tell me, I still have friends in Juneau, and we talk about all sorts of things, but I've had three different people comment what a great job ADA and AEA has done in front of the various committees this year. Prepared, committed, let's see another word, unflappable facts. It was just some really good reports for Ted and Sarah and the whole crew who have been in front of those people. So I wanted to make sure I passed that along, because that's a big part of what we do, and that group can be pretty difficult sometimes. But the reviews coming back have just been stellar for you folks, and so I want to make sure you know that and give you a pat on the back. Thank you. You're a big part of our success. Thanks.
Moving to Ron.
Yeah, just to kind of echo what Gary said, Ted and Susan, you guys are doing a good job, and just keep up the good work. That's all I've got to say. Thank you.
And for Gary and Ron, because we're going to be transitioning from the ADA to the AE portion of the meeting, Sarah, Nick, Emily, and others are here to hear these compliments. So, thanks. Okay, Robert.
I have no comments today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
None for me. Thank you.
For me.
Okay, I'll make mine brief. I just want to say that in early March, at a very large conference called PDAC, Prospectors Developers Association of Canada, an event was held in Toronto. It's a 30,000-plus conference, and I appreciate that ADA was there, as well as staff from Department of Revenue. staff from my Division of Economic Development, myself, university, DNR. And it was something where we've, like the Roundup Conference, which happens in late January in Vancouver, we've had a state presence, but we took it to a whole other level, and I just think it, we also had many elements of the private sector participating. So it was just one of those times where a lack of visibility in a key industry, it definitely elevated. So with that, is there a motion to adjourn our ADA board meeting?
So moved.
Second.